day, and welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Fourth Quarter 2015 Earnings Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Denis Jasmin, Vice President of the Investors Relations. Please go ahead, Mr. Jasmin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2015 Fourth Quarter Earnings Conference Call. Today's call is also being webcast, and a replay will be available on SNC-Lavalin website within 24 hours. With us today are Neil Bruce, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alain-Pierre Reynaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit themselves to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind you that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements made during today's call and slide presentation about expected future events and financial results may be forward-looking and therefore subject to risk, uncertainties, and assumptions. These are described in our financial documents and could cause actual results to differ materially from what may be inferred from the forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements represent management expectations as of today and accordingly are subject to change. We disclaim any intention or obligation to update any forward-looking statement except as required by law. You will find more information about the risks and uncertainties associated with our business in our financial documents filed with the Canadian Securities Commission, which can also be found under the Investors section of our website. I would now like to turn the conference over to Neil Bruce.
Merci, Denis. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. On today's call, we'll review our segmental performance, our fourth quarter and full year of 2015 financials, as well as discussing our outlook for 2016. But before, I would like to review our recent accomplishments and remind you of our priorities. We've worked diligently to reposition ourselves to do better reflect market realities and create a company that is easier to do business with for customers and partners. We need to be equipped to tackle the headwinds that are affecting our marketplace, as well as being prepared to face up to new ones. Flexibility and an ability to respond quickly are key to this. Therefore, we have already taken meaningful steps in the new chapter of our five-year strategic plan, improving operational efficiency and execution in all our businesses. We made smart strategic organizational changes to be more competitive and agile and identified a significant number of cost reduction initiatives through our Step Change program. This program was successfully completed and should deliver twice its $50 million implementation costs this financial year. Our focus has now turned to improving operational excellence in order to sustain a culture which prizes efficiency and execution. Let me give you a brief recap of our priorities, which you can find on slide five. First, a streamlined structure. We've actively been simplifying the way we work over the last 6 months and will continue to do so. Second, focus on delivery. SNC-Lavalin has lived through many distractions and our employees have coped admirably for a sustained period of time. Now we're directing all our focus and energy towards consistent delivery. We will continue to invest in our client-facing teams and world-class execution capability, and want all our shareholders, customers, and partners to have full confidence in our ability to deliver on projects. I believe we've done this in Q3 and now again in Q4, but we appreciate that we need to deliver to expectations consistently to have the full confidence of all of our stakeholders. Third, a performance-driven culture. We have delivered good performance in 2015, and have increased our ambition for 2016. I have set some clear targets, including delivering an annualized adjusted E&C EBITDA margin of 7% in 2017. And fourth, growth, both organically and through acquisitions. Our significant capital resources and funding capacity provide us with the ability to support growth through acquisitions. but only once we have demonstrated our ability to deliver sustainable and consistent improvement to profits. We will continue to add capabilities in greater depth where we have a market edge. We are also working at winning new major contracts in each of our sectors. We have excellent prospects for growth, a strategic plan to deliver, and a financial flexibility to support our ambitions. Most importantly, we can rely on a highly dedicated, mobile, and multicultural workforce. We are entering 2016 with a strong balance sheet and a steady and diversified backlog, which gives me confidence in the strategy we have outlined. As a result of the diversity in our market segments, the broad offering within each sector, as well as our restructuring efforts, we are well positioned to continue to offer our clients the most suitable, innovative, and cost-effective engineering solutions for their needs. So now looking at the segments, beginning with slide 6. Our oil and gas sector continues to perform well, and we see many prospects and opportunities ahead, particularly in the Middle East region. This sector in 2015 generated $3.9 billion of revenues and 7.7% EBIT margin. It also closed the year with a $3.6 billion backlog. As you know, the oil and gas industry continues to face very challenging global market conditions, including low oil prices. The impact is that our clients are strategically shifting their spending priorities, especially in the upstream side of the business, from new developments or CapEx to sustaining their existing capital investments. Clients' focus is transferring towards improving their current operations and trying to make them more efficient. Fortunately, our oil and gas business has tremendous engineering and construction expertise and capabilities across all phases of the project lifecycle, which makes us less vulnerable than certain of our peers during the current challenging market backdrop. Proof of that is the major Middle East contract worth $800 million awarded this week for the development of the infrastructure and processing facilities for a gas field. We are recognized globally for our agile and responsive approach, our expertise in sustaining capital investments, encompassing brownfield engineering and construction services, which supplement production and create improvements through the lifespan of a client facility, as well as maintenance shutdowns and turnarounds and operational support. We expect this sector to continue to perform well in 2016, and be one of the main contributors to our net income. Note that in November, we were also awarded a contract by Qatar Gas for the water recycling facility at its Lafan Refinery 2 plant in Ras Lafan Industrial City. We continue to remain cautious about the mining and metallurgy market. While this sector remains depressed by the current commodity price environment, we are seeing some good opportunities, particularly in the aluminium and fertilizer sectors. The mining and metallurgy backlog at the end of the year was $279 million. In November, we were awarded a major EPCM contract for a greenfield potash mining and processing facility in Ethiopia. In February 2016, we were also awarded an engineering services contract to provide operation support services to Emirates Global Aluminium, two aluminium smelters in the UAE. This sector generated for the year $781 million of revenues and a 9.4% EBIT margin. The power sector has good potential for new nuclear and gas-fired thermal power generation projects in Canada and internationally. The power backlog at the end of the year stood at $2.3 billion, but did not include our share of the $2.7 billion contract awarded in January 2016 for the execution phase of the Darlington Nuclear Refurbishment Project by OPG. It will be added to the Q1 2016 backlog. The sector generated for the year $1.8 billion of revenues and a 6.5 EBIT margin. In infrastructure, particularly in Canada, we're also pursuing some specific prospects internationally. We were recently shortlisted on two major projects, the Gordie Howe Bridge and Finch West LRT projects, both in Ontario. We were also awarded a district cooling contract for the Riyadh King Khalid International Airport in Saudi Arabia. The infrastructure and construction backlog was $3.8 billion at the end of the year, and 2015 revenues totaled $1.8 billion and ended the year at break-even. This sector should return to profitability in 2016. In Q4, we realigned our rail and transit business processes, brands, and market strategy to offer a larger portfolio of expertise and an end-to-end client service offering. This strategic move unites SNC-Lavalin's outstanding global rail and transit expertise under one umbrella, bringing together over 1,500 engineers and experts in construction and operations and maintenance across the world. The operations and maintenance backlog stood at $2 billion at the end of the year, and 2015 revenues totaled $1 billion, with an EBIT margin of 5.3% for the year. Lastly, on slide 11, as you may have noticed, we've changed the name of our investment capabilities from ICI to Capital. We believe Capital better reflects the scope of the company's investment activities that will be offered across our four sectors to increase business development and strategically monetize our mature assets to maximize return on equity. Capital will implement a developer approach, creating business development opportunities through close collaboration with all four sectors and business partners, as well as cross-sector investment opportunities. The new structure that we want to put in place for a certain number of our North American concessions, excluding Highway 407, is progressing well, and we expect to make an announcement in the first half of 2016. As for the international concessions, they will be looked at individually on a case-by-case basis. In February, we have reached an agreement to sell our indirect ownership interest in the Malta International Airport for a cash consideration of €63 million. We expect the transaction to close before the end of the first half of 2016. This is a good example of our approach to monetizing high-quality investments when opportunities arise, thereby demonstrating and underpinning the significant underlying value of our equity portfolio. In the meantime, Highway 407 continues to deliver very good results, with year-over-year increases of 13% in revenues and 3% in vacancies, as well as an increase of 14% in EBITDA. Now let's move on to the results, turning to slide 12. We are pleased with our quarterly results. We delivered on our commitments and met our 2015 guidance. We maintained a strong balance sheet, which we believe is essential. It allows us to continue to invest in our client-facing teams and world-class execution capability, and gives our customers and partners confidence in our ability to deliver on projects. Despite the persistent softer economic environment, we've also maintained a stable and diversified revenue backlog of $12 billion at the end of the year. Again, note that this excludes two recently major awards in nuclear power and oil and gas worth approximately $2 billion. We're introducing our 2016 outlook range for adjusted EPS from E&C at 150 to 170. Which represents a significant increase in a challenging market. We are capitalizing on our performance improvement and on our diversified E&C model operating across our four sectors of activity. In summary, we met 2015 guidance, delivered on our commitments, and are raising our 2016 guidance with respect to adjusted EPS from E&C. Despite the turbulent market and persisting softer economic environment, we are entering 2016 with a strong balance sheet and a steady and diversified backlog. We successfully completed the step change program, but we will continue to take additional measures throughout the year, if required, to ensure we achieve our 2017 EBITDA margin target. Our focus will now turn to improving operational excellence in order to sustain a culture of efficiency and execution. Finally, I would also like to thank our team who worked tirelessly with the Public Works and Government Services Canada to reach an administrative agreement. In brief, it allows SNC-Lavalin to continue to supply goods and services to all Canadian federal departments and agencies, both at home and abroad. With that, I'll pass the call over to Alan Pierre to go over our financial results in more detail.
Thank you, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone. I will continue on slide 12. ENT revenues for the quarter were in line with last year but increased by 9% compared with third quarter of 2015. Year over year, we saw revenue increases in two of our segments, namely oil and gas and infrastructures and constructions, while mining and metallurgy and operation and maintenance decreased. Revenues for the power segment also increased, reflecting the fact that revenues generated between the company and AutoLink are no longer eliminated in 2015. If we remove this elimination impact, power revenue actually decreased. For a second quarter in a row, EBIT margin was positive for all segments. The segment EBIT from ENC substantially improved to $191 million in the quarter, compared with a negative EBIT of $169 million in 2014. The negative EBIT in 2014 was mainly due to charges related to the restructuring and right-sizing plan and unfavorable cost reforecast, while the 2015 EBIT benefited from higher gross margin ratios and lower SG&A expenses. Actually, SG&A expenses from ENC in the fourth quarter were $205 million, or a ratio of 7.9% over ENC revenues. SG&A expenses ended the year at $825 million, which represents a ratio of ENC revenue of 8.8% compared to 10.4% in 2014 and 11% in 2013. On a like-to-like basis, i.e., excluding CANS and corporate initiatives, SG&A expenses decreased by almost $200 million between 2013 and 2015. We actually absorbed all CANS incremental SG&A expenses in 2015. The segment EBIT from capital decreased to $49 million in the quarter, compared with $1.7 billion in 2014. This decrease is mainly explained by a gain of $1.6 billion before taxes on the sale of AltaLink in 2014. Additionally, I remind that AltaLink is no longer contributing in 2015, whereas the contribution of AltaLink was included in the company's result in 2014 until it was sold on December 2014. Adjusted EBITDA margin from ENC was 5.6% for the fourth quarter of 2015, compared with 0.3% for the fourth quarter of 2014. This is mainly due to an improved adjusted EBIT from the oil and gas and infrastructure and construction segments, as well as yield G&A cost reduction from our step change program throughout the sectors. Our adjusted net income from ENC was $66 million, or 44 cents per diluted share, compared with $23 million, or 15 cents per diluted share last year. Now, let's talk about our balance sheet. Our balance sheet remains strong, with a cash balance of $1.58 billion at the end of December, slightly higher than at the end of September. In the fourth quarter of 2015, the company generated $244 million in cash flow from operating activities, compared to $167 million in the third quarter of 2015. The company also returned $37 million to shareholders through dividends in the fourth quarter and repaid its short-term recourse debt of $90 million. The only recourse debt outstanding at December 31, 2015, is the $350 million debentures, which are due July 2019. Accordingly, our recourse debt-to-capital ratio stands at 9%. We believe that, as we speak today, as this number can vary depending on the stage, the size, the location, and number of projects that we have, the The company requires approximately $1 billion of cash for its operations. This amount excludes any potential outcomes from the ongoing investigation and class actions. Now, moving on to slide 13. Our revenue backlog at year-end was $12 billion. And, as mentioned by Neil, this backlog excluded two recently merger awards worth approximately $2 billion. Our backlog is well diversified between our segments, and the mix by geography was 51% Canadian and 49% non-Canadian. The percentage of reimbursable contracts in our overall backlog was 40% at quarter end. Bookings on the first quarter were $1.9 billion and include $900 million of bookings in the oil and gas segment and $400 million in the infrastructure segment. Turning to slide 14, given the company's long-term outlook, cash position, and diversified backlog, we are increasing the quarterly dividend by 4% to 26 cents per share, while many competitors are cutting or removing their dividends. Note that the company has paid quarterly dividends for 26 consecutive years and has increased its yearly dividend for each of the past 15 years. Note also that our 2015 return to shareholders was better than the Toronto Stock Exchange Composite Index. This concludes my presentations. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow everybody an opportunity to signal. Our first question is from Yuri Link from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I wanted to dig in a little bit into the EBITDA margin cadence as we move into 2017 and the 7% goal. I mean, do we start to see real progress on that goal in the back half of this year? And can you just confirm that that's an average margin for 2017 and not an exit rate?
It's definitely an average margin for the year, not an exit rate. And we will be progressively working from first quarter through the fourth quarter to try and achieve that. And I think as I sort of talked before, you know, this is really coming from three main things, which is the step change program in terms of reducing our cost base, and we'll continue, not in the step change program, but we'll continue to be very vigilant around the cost base as we go through 16. It's also the operational excellence program that we are launching at the end of Q1, so at the end of this month, but also just better, more consistent performance on delivery of our projects. So if you take the three of them, that's really what makes up the confidence that we have in terms of being able to deliver that.
Okay, that's helpful. I guess the step changes is that, so that's about $100 million benefit in terms of lower costs. Is that all incremental in 2016, or did we see any of that in 15? And is that all on the SG&A line?
It's all on the G&A line, and the vast majority of it is incremental in 16. There might have been a little bit that sort of drifted, that we realized in the end of quarter four, but effectively the vast majority incremental in 16.
Okay, and then just to get to the 7% again, so I get that part on the G&A. I mean, does the operational excellence, I mean, does that speak to higher gross margins as well? I'm just trying to do the math to get there. If it's just all SG&A, or if we're going to expect some margin improvement?
No. It's all about, operational excellence is looking at every aspect of our business. So it's, it is SG&A, but it's also gross margin. It's also about improving our cash flows. It's every aspect of our business. So, so we are looking for increased performance in all of the lines. The one thing I'd add is I wouldn't necessarily sort of draw a straight line between exiting 15 and just assuming that quarter by quarter that's going to be delivered. Because as I said, the Operational Excellence Program gets launched at the end of Q1. So therefore, the benefits of that you will see accelerating through Q2, 3, and 4 to help us get to the 7%.
Right. So sequentially, we'll step down from the 5.6 we saw this quarter, right?
I'm not really sure in terms of all of that. We've got some work to do, but across the four quarters, we are confident about achieving the our target.
Okay, and then last, and I'll get off here. Can you just give me the dollar amount of projects that are at zero or negative margin in the backlog?
I mean, it's really next to nothing, and it's becoming pretty insignificant now. I mean, we talked before. I think previously management talked about six legacy projects in the main being the bulk of that. St. Justine is the last contract, and again, as we talked before, we have performed peer reviews, reviewed the project. We are pretty confident about the outturn of all of that. So it's pretty insignificant.
Thanks, guys. I'll turn it over.
If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2 on your telephone keypad. Our next question will be from Anthony Zaitcha from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon. Neil, looking at your backlog, it mentioned that 60% is fixed price, 40% reimbursable. Do you expect a change in the mix for 2016, and what would be an optimal mix for not there yet? And any color on the proportion of services?
Yeah, well, effectively, what you will have seen in this quarter and one of the changes is very much looking at contracts from a lump sum and a reimbursable perspective, and that's the reason that we're also giving the numbers and the flavor around all of that to better reflect the type of contracts that we've got there. I mean, ultimately, I think in an E&C business, if you are too reimbursable, then I think it's really, really difficult to grow, especially in this environment. And ultimately, if you're too lump sum, then I think you are introducing a degree of risk. So from our perspective, we believe that a 60-40 or a 40-60 within that range is pretty optimal. I mean, if we could determine and choose, which we can't, 50-50 would be, or 60-40 would be fine. But we're really trying to operate within that 60-40, 40-60 envelope.
Okay. And, considering that your cash rich at $1.6 billion, and I believe Alika had mentioned that you need about $1 billion, can you give us a bit of a breakdown on the infrastructure side and as well as on the oil and gas side, how much working capital you'd need separately? And then my last question is with reference to, again, your balance sheet and opportunities in acquisitions, how important are acquisitions in SNC's future?
I will answer the first part and maybe deal with the second part of your questions. First, in terms of cash position, I remind that December 31st is just a cutoff date. So it's a photography of an instance. It doesn't reflect the average cash position we have over the year. As you know, maybe that we are paying a lot of, we have to pay a lot of expenses during quarter one, for instance, the interest on our debentures and so on and so on. So, grossly speaking, we consider that we are comfortable with $1 million minimum to run our business, and considering a potential outcome from our ongoing legal affairs and some uncertainty, a buffer between 10 and 20 days of our revenues is the right amount of cash to have. In terms of sectors, we don't disclose the cash need by sectors, but you have to know that a substantial part of our restricted cash is coming with a P3 program, obviously, or let's say a joint venture with partners in oil and gas and infrastructures. Nevertheless, what we observe that from a sector analysis point of view, each of them restore their ability to generate cash from their operating activities, and you have observed that during Q3 and Q4, and will continue on this trend over 2016.
I think with regards to acquisitions, you won't hear us talk much about acquisitions at all in the first half of this year. As we previously said, you know, we're concentrating on delivering performance, and that's really what we want the organization to focus on. But assuming that we do deliver and we do instill stakeholder confidence back into the business and in our ability to deliver, then acquisitions are absolutely part of our five-year strategic plan. We want to be able to grow within our four chosen sectors. We believe that the diversified E&C model across all four is the right approach. And ultimately, we see opportunities for us to expand within these four sectors, within key aspects within that sector in terms of technical capabilities and also geographies. So it's a key part of the five-year strategy, but you won't hear us talk about acquisitions much in the first half of this year.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Our next question is from Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Neil, just following on that, those comments about acquisitions, not till maybe the second half of F16 at the earliest, just wondering, does the requirement for an acquisition preempt the sale process of your major concessions at this point, or would you see those as independent in terms of timing?
No, we see it as independent.
Okay. And then just wondered if, in terms of the, on the legal front, NAPL, you twice mentioned, you know, the $1 billion in cash required to operate, excluding any legal liability. Is there been any change on that front? I know there's a preliminary hearing date for 2018, but I'm just wondering, is there a difference in terms of expectation to becoming closer to some kind of a settlement or some kind of a payout?
Well, I think you saw last Friday that the preliminary date was set for September 2018, about 2.5 years away. And that's the preliminary piece. So, you know, a conclusion of all of that, you could sort of guess when that would be, 2020, 2021 maybe. So from that perspective, you know, we really do believe that from a competitiveness perspective, I really do think that SNC-Lavalin and any other Canadian company who ended up in the same position as us is at a serious competitive disadvantage versus our US and European peers. And, you know, not surprising, you wouldn't be surprised to know that, you know, we do believe that some form of deferred prosecution agreement should be implemented in Canada, not just for us, but for all Canadian companies that are at a serious competitive disadvantage in the international market.
Okay.
Our next question is from Michael Tupholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to go back to the step change program. The $100 million, is that an after-tax savings number?
The $100 million is just straight off of the G&A, so pre.
Perfect. And then as a follow-on to that, are you able to provide a little bit more detail around how those savings will be spread across the various segments and also within the corporate SG&A level?
Well, in terms of, in terms of sort of allocation, we'd prefer not to do that. I think it's quite important to give ourselves, but also to give you visibility around how the sectors are performing, which is what we've tried to do in this presentation, which is a little bit different from previous presentations, and then ultimately you can see the G&A below these lines. So it's not our intention to allocate back across sectors.
Fair enough. Is it just maybe one further point on that? Is it fair to say, Neil, that the step change program at least touches all of the various areas, maybe to different degrees, but there's some benefit experienced across the various segments and corporately?
Absolutely. No. So step change was not just on a corporate G&A line. It was on G&A corporately plus all four sectors. Because some of the G&A is actually items of expense that effectively is in the cost of sales, and is not on the central corporate line.
Okay, perfect. And then you talked about expecting a return to profitability in the infrastructure and construction segment in 2016. Just wondering if you can provide a little bit more detail around your outlook for that segment on the margin. On the margin part of it.
Yeah, well, generally we're talking about the full year of 2016 because, as you would have seen, the infrastructure has been profitable in the last two quarters and we expect that to continue. So,
I guess that's a good point. I mean, it has been profitable the last couple of quarters. Would you expect you'd expect to see continued improvement in the margin from that which you saw in the back half of 15 as you progress through 16?
I mean, we'll continue to drive that, absolutely. I think in Q3 you saw an acceleration of a couple of things. I think it was $20 million that we delivered in Q3. But yes, absolutely, we're continuing to drive the performance from a base of where we are in Q3, Q4, not starting again.
Okay, perfect. I'll turn it over. Thank you.
Our next question is from Frédéric Bastier of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. I was wondering if you could tell me if the gas field project contract that you won or at least announced last week, is it a cost-reimbursable contract?
It's a bit of a mix, but ultimately we're still waiting on the client's approval to be able to disclose more details. They were happy to disclose, because it's so significant, they were happy to disclose the amount, but we're still working with them in terms of the details of the release.
Okay. There were some suggestions in the press that you bid much lower than the second lowest bidder. Could you provide some comment there?
Well, I think that suggestion also said the value of the contract was $500 million. So.
Correct, but it was US, from a U.S. source, so it could be US, $500 US dollars.
It still doesn't quite add up, though, but I mean, that's just press speculation. You know, if you look at, say, I mean, if you look at our objectives, you know, having a strategy that was suggested doesn't really fit well with our EPS targets and our 7% EBITDA for 17.
Okay, and then you mentioned that the timing of a potentially large M&A isn't dependent on you divesting of the 407, but is it fair to say or fair to conclude, based on your comment about execution in the first half, that it's not a priority right now?
That the divestment of 407 is not a priority?
Correct.
It's consistent with with Q3. Our priority is on performance delivery of the ENC business, and we'll focus on that.
Okay, that's great to hear. Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question will be from Maxim Saitchev from Dundee Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just have a question in terms of materiality on the M&A front and how that squares against your commentary in relation to requiring capital on the balance sheet. Just trying to get a sense, if hypothetically you were looking at, larger scale acquisitions, how that could be financed, or right now the priority is really adding specific expertise / stock-in acquisitions. Thanks.
Well, I think at the moment, as Alan Pierre said previously, we've got the cash position at the end of the year. We do have a requirement of $1 billion. We also have the opportunities not just in terms of acquisitions, but also to bid and invest on large infrastructure projects. Hopefully we will be, and we are doing that, and hopefully we'll be winning within that arena. So the whole piece is around, it's not just about tied completely to the acquisition piece and potential acquisitions for the future. I mean, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I think we've also said on quite a few occasions that we're very, very mindful of the fact that, we're not looking to keep, large amounts of surplus cash and not do something with it. So we are continually reviewing the allocation piece, and we will certainly do what we think is right for shareholders at any given point in time.
Okay, that's very helpful. And maybe just one quick question in relation to visibility on oil and gas front in terms of what opportunity that you're seeing. I guess predominantly it's going to be in the Middle East, but if you can provide some additional color on that segment, that would be much appreciated.
Well, I think, as we said, I think we are quite a defensive play with regards to the oil and gas sector. So if you just take things like, it's widely reported that there's $400 billion worth of CapEx projects that have been either cancelled or deferred. They are, in the main, upstream projects. They're in high cost of capital areas. They're in deep water, upstream, offshore, and basically, we don't play in any of that. Our expertise is very regionally focused, low cost of capital areas. I think we've taught, for well over a year now that our real focus is the Middle East. Very mindful of the fact that you know, people were asking us about backlog and replacement on, you know, for Gorgon going forward, and the Middle East is absolutely our focus. That's where I think we are quite unique in certain areas and services, and we continue to see, you know, a lot of opportunities out there for us, especially in the Middle East, and there's some in the US as well in terms of midstream and downstream opportunities. You know, and there's no doubt, I mean, I'm certainly not saying that there isn't sort of pressure there at all, because the one thing that's common, it doesn't really matter whether you're talking about upstream, midstream, downstream, or wherever you are in the world, there are cost pressures and there's margin pressures. So we see that too. And that's why I think, again, we've talked about, we see a good pipeline. We see we're relatively confident around our revenues. But we do see pressure on margins. So we're looking at various ways of trying to counter that by either finding smarter ways to deliver for our clients where the margin becomes less important, or in some cases we do need to give a bit on the margin. But again, you know, back to the earlier question around step change, we implemented step change across all four sectors, including oil and gas, and we were trying to make sure that the G&A reduction was attempting to compensate the pressure on the gross margins. I'm not sure it'll quite work out that way, so therefore there'll be a bit of pressure on the margin itself. But from an activity level perspective, we are pretty confident.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Our next question will be from Michael Topholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple quick follow-ups. In terms of the corporate SG&A expenses, they were pretty high in the quarter, and I realize that it sounds like those should be coming down in part due to step change, but is there any guidance you can provide around how to think about SG&A in 16? And also, is there anything unusual in the fourth quarter?
I think in terms of guidance, we try to sort of look at, you know, giving the idea around, you know, $50 million to after tax to implement, and you know we expect double that in savings, and that's probably as far as we'd really want to go. I don't think there's anything. Is there anything?
Yeah, first they are very similar to Q4 2014, 2005 compared to 2011. Second, this year we have been negatively impacted by foreign exchange adverse effect coming from USA. Full year basis, this amount range in the $20-25 million, and has been very important in Q4 2015. So, saying that, you have to have in mind that the cycle of our G&A in Q4 is systematically higher than the previous quarter, due to, let's say, a certain number of irregular expense coming during this quarter. But let's say, when you go back to the history, you have no difference, and we are pretty efficient on the full year basis, as it has been already explained. So the quarterly variation is not significant.
Okay, sorry, I'm not sure I'm totally clear on this. I understand Neil's comment, I guess, about you know, step change is a benefit to the entire SG&A line. I guess what I'm looking at is,
yeah,
in note 3, segmented disclosures, where you actually break out the corporate SG&A, and so it was a $72 million amount this quarter, and then the prior year was 11.6. So it's a big difference year over year, and a big number compared to prior quarters in 15 as well. So that's why I'm kind of wondering how we think about that.
Michael, it's Denny. If you look into our MD&A on section 8.6, we actually explain the increase is corporate SG&A, and that explanation there, you can apply it to the Q4. Note also that in 2014, we did have a refund or a revenue coming from the Riyad Bin Issa case where we got refunded an amount. So that was understated for sure.
Okay, perfect. And then just one more from me. Within the mining segment, the margins had been pretty strong there through the first three quarters, and then if you look at them in the fourth quarter, if you adjust for the favorable amount you received there, it looks like the margins were negative. Can you just help me think about? I mean, I realize that's an end market that's under a fair bit of pressure, but how do we think about that area?
I mean, I think you've got to look at these margins more as averages across the year. I mean, quarter by quarter, we can have sort of fairly, you know, you can have fairly large variances depending on whether a project is starting or completing or where we've completed a major milestone that triggers, you know, a release of contingency because we've gone past, you know, a given risk. So I'd encourage people really to look at more the yearly overall margins. All four sectors could very well go up and down in any given quarter, but you really need to look at probably at least two quarters, three, four quarters, and we've got confidence in the averages. We've got less control over the quarter by quarter EBIT margins.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, thank you.
Our next question is of Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a quick follow-up on FX. Just wondered how, you know, with backlog, a good chunk coming from international, how FX plays into the guidance for next year in terms of mix of revenue coming through.
Well, we don't disclose that, and we don't go in and sort of analyze all of that. I mean, you know, clearly we like working and getting paid in U.S. dollars.
But on top of that, we can remind the basic principles. As you know, we are risk adverse versus foreign exchange, i.e. We organize our operation to neutralize this effect as much as possible. Obviously, we have to face any conversion effect from our U.S. dollar functional currency to Canadian dollar functional currency. But except that, we are not, let's say, envisaging not to hedge all our position either through cash flow hedge or specific operational markets. We don't leave open any position related to our project.
Okay, so you would hedge your receivables, I understand, but the translation impact of your profitability would come through in your bottom line.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just wondered if that's a net positive going into 2016 relative to 15.
I'm not sure it's really significant.
No.
Okay, that's it for me. Thanks.
Our next question is from Philippe Bastien of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks again. Just a clarification. Alain Pierre, when we think of excess cash, should we subtract the $1 billion in cash to support existing operations from the $1.6 that you have on the balance sheet or the $1.2 net of recourse debt?
We are considering cash position net of recourse debt. And second, once again, I remind you that December 31st is a cutoff date. Is not representing the average of our cash position all over the year.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll take our next question from Benoit Poirier from Desjardins. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, good afternoon, gentlemen. If we come back on the oil and gas margin, obviously a pretty strong quarter. I was just wondering if you could provide any color on how sustainable it is for 2016 and if there was any particular non-recurring items in the quarter.
Well, I think, as I sort of said in one of the previous questions, I think you've really got to look at the year's average in terms of that being more representative. And we are under margin pressure. We've done quite a lot of work in terms of trying to mitigate that. But, you know, I would look at the overall 2015 number and apply a view around, you know, a decrease in margin of some sorts there. Well, I mean, we're trying to mitigate it, but it is a constant negotiation.
Okay, and just for the infrastructure segment, obviously 2.1% and lower performance versus Q3. Just wondering whether it reflects the early contribution of Eglinton and also Champlain Bridge, and what type of improvement we might see next year.
No, I mean, there wasn't a massive amount in there for these projects. I mean, they're right at the beginning. If I understood your question right, and if I haven't, then please ask again. But I think infrastructure in Q3, we did have some additional benefits that came forward that was originally expected to transpire in Q4, and they came forward. I think it was $20 million or so. So therefore, you know, in a pure quarterly margin perspective, Q3 looked really good. Q4 not quite so good. And again, I think that's why, you know, it's important looking at our business. I wouldn't be trying to, you know, look at any given quarter and try and take that as a trend. I think you've got to look at the annual numbers and what we're trying to achieve. Bearing in mind that, you know, we've been very clear that, you know, infrastructure return to profitability in Q3 and Q4, and we expect that to continue.
Okay. And just in terms of working capital items, I mean, you've been pretty successful to land some large fees this year, and there are still sizable opportunities in 2016. Just wondering whether we could expect some big changes in terms of working capital through 2016.
Let's say what we, as you know, you will notice that our working capital is very solid on the liability side, so it's good. In terms of change in working capital, we hope to maintain this position and even to try to improve it. We have launched a series of initiatives. We already explained that in terms of working capital management. And on top of that, we have a certain number of pressure which are disappearing, as, let's say, the usage of reserve on our legacy project, which are now completing only completion, which will release the pressure on our working capital, obviously.
Okay. And last one for me, if we look at the power sector, you mentioned a good contribution, obviously, in 2016 with the ramp-up of Darlington. I was just wondering whether it's more specific to Darlington, or are there any other project opportunities? And what also should we expect in terms of ramping up Darlington?
Well, I think you'll have a gradual sort of increase in the Darlington work. I mean, the power sector has, you know, a number of really good opportunities, especially in terms of the work that we're doing within hydro and nuclear, some in thermal power, probably less so in terms of T&D, because as we've previously stated, you know, T&D was very linked to the AltaLink investment program, and that's come down considerably. So from a power perspective, it's, you know, nuclear is high-quality, long-term work, and we absolutely, you know, think it's fantastic to get that into our backlog and our portfolio. But there are other good opportunities there as well in terms of hydro and thermal power.
Okay. And Bruce, just related to the Bruce project, what is your kind of expectation in terms of timing with respect to the contract, the nuclear work?
Well, I guess that's up to, you know, that's up to the customer, but, you know, we would like to we would like to see something moving on that, you know, certainly in the next quarter, but ultimately that's in the hands of our customer.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
That concludes today's question and answer session. At this time, I would like to turn the conference back to Mr. Denis Germain for additional or closing remarks.
Thank you all for having us join us today. If you have any further questions, please do not hesitate to contact me. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation. Have a great day.